Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome to a special Thanksgiving edition of the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 54, being recorded on the 25th of November, 2014. My name is Sujit Mello. I'm a senior consultant with Microsoft in the app dev space based out of New Jersey. And on Skype with me, I have my two esteemed colleagues, Kale and Evan. Guys?
Yeah, this is Kale Teeter. I'm in the New York region, and I work with the Azure PaaS COE, specializing mostly in PaaS development and PaaS migrations.
And this is Evan Maslick, and I'm a support escalation engineer with the Windows team supporting Azure IaaS.
Great. So it's been a tumultuous week for Azure, to say the least. I know it's just a topic today for what we're going to cover. The regular topic we're going to cover is Azure Batch, a new service that is available on Azure, and our own Kale Teeter has done some work on that area, and he's going to share with us his experiences with Azure Batch to enlighten all of us, me included. But before we get started with that, I'd like to just maybe how about we have a little bit of a roundtable discussion on the big event from last week. What do you think?
I'd rather not relive it ever again, but, you know.
So Evan, I think I'm sure our listeners know that, you know, you're this is something that you're closest to being in that your role at Microsoft is in the Azure support area. So give us some sort of insight into what it was like for you and for your team.
Yeah, it was, so I was actually on shift when it started. And what's interesting as a side effect of kind of my role and how long I've been in the Azure space, I've just got a lot of people in the field that know me, right? TAMs, you know, people like you guys, MCS, right? I've worked with their customers or worked with them on hot issues. And so it's, you know, pretty common for them to reach out to me with just kind of random questions. And so, you know, I was working with an engineer who fixed somebody's site-to-site VPN. And then as they were looking at something, he's like, yeah, the guy's VM's just shut off on the screen. You know, they were looking in the portal at something, and they just started flipping down to, I forget what the status was, but unknown or something like that. And, you know, normally when we see something like that, it's because you hit your spending limit or something like that. And we just kind of said, oh, you know, call subscription management and start digging. And then, you know, I started getting these emails from a couple of folks I know in Australia and New Zealand. They said, hey, is something going on with Azure? You know, two customers just pinged this saying they're down. I said, I haven't, you know, seen or heard anything. And then I look at our queue and I just see Sev-A cases just popping in by the second. And it just, you know, kind of progressively got worse. Through that, I left. I think I stayed around till midnight and then left, and I came back in early the next morning, and it was, I think by that point we were mostly past the things are getting worse, and we were dealing with the fallout, right? VMs that didn't start up afterwards, you know, people that didn't know how to recover their VMs, all that kind of stuff. But it was, I would say, without going into the specific numbers, we had two orders of magnitude more cases in a 12-hour span than we normally have in an entire day.
Wow.
We were still digging through the backlog even at the beginning of this week.
And, you know, Kale and I briefly talked about it on last week's podcast, and we went over the blog item that Jason Zander put out explaining that this was a storage problem with the storage subsystem. They had put a patch up there, and although they had flighted the patch before, for some reason it didn't go well when they threw it open to the rest of the community, the rest of the customers on Azure, and that's caused some sort of a looping problem, which they had to back out eventually. But what was the I know my, you know, some of my websites were down, that was the extent for me. I think my VMs were down as well. But did you say that some people were losing VMs or?
Yeah, well, so we always have, and this is true in the on-premises Windows world as well. If you go walk around and yank the power cable out of your computer 1,000 times, you know, at some point you're going to hit, you know, some bit is being written and just the wrong bit is being written at just the wrong time. And when it comes back up, you're going to get registry corruption or, MFT corruption, like all the different things that can go wrong.
Got it.
When we rebooted, I don't know, and I don't even know the number, but I mean, tens and hundreds of thousands of VMs in that relatively short window, some percentage of those just don't come back.
Wow.
For any number of reasons. We saw, you know, registry corruption. We saw file system corruption. We saw, weird things were like, you know, I don't think we didn't see any data loss, which for me is in some ways a testament to the way that the system is designed, where you might lose something that is relatively non-critical. Like, I mean, again, your registry is critical, but it's not something you know, your data is still persistent on another drive, right? So you wouldn't lose that. I didn't hear any reports of any of that, but there is a whole bunch of people that did end up having to rebuild VMs. Or would have to, you know, do things like resize their VMs to change hosts because things just got out of sync. I mean, all those different things that could go wrong.
Okay.
There's a blog posting on, I'll put it in the show notes, but there's a blog posting on the Azure Technical Support blog that my team and the Azure Platform Technical Support team collaborated on to basically, here's all the things we do to recover VMs that are in this state. In one blog and, as step-by-step as we can. And then actually the engineering team worked with us and we put a script out to do a lot of this. It's not, you know, perfect. It is truly a script that we threw together in, 48 hours. But it automates a bunch of the steps for recovery that we're going to actually continue to refine for going forward as well.
Okay.
But, yeah, it was a stressful 4 or 5 days at that point. For you guys, you guys were out in the field. I mean, what was the perspective from the field?
So, I know, we were talking about on last week's podcast, and, I have this, semi-serious thing, which at least with my own VMs and the websites, but, our Mr. Kale and Mr. Jeff Little, they were having other issues, You want to tell them, Kale?
Yeah, if you haven't listened, Evan, it was Xbox Live, so I fired up Halo,
and I
was like, what happened to my save file? Like,
I actually hadn't. I've been so busy, I have done very little other than work cases, but this is actually one of the challenges with storage, or some of the core Azure platforms like storage, like compute. When they go down, we actually, just like we layer on top of Windows, right, for everything we do as a company, or a lot of things we do as a company, we layer it on top of storage. So my team specifically, we not only saw a bunch of VMs that wouldn't reboot, but the Azure Virtual Private Network, the Azure VPN, sits on top of Azure PaaS instances. Well, the PaaS instances restarted, which caused some problems, and some of them didn't come back up. Mm. And so we had Azure VPNs that were broken. Xbox Live stores their cloud, I think it's their cloud saves that they call them. I forget the exact term, but those are in Azure Blob Storage. Even the Service Health dashboard turned out to have a dependency that we didn't realize on Azure Storage, right? So, it kind of cascaded up at that point. So, I feel bad that you couldn't play games.
I can still play. I just couldn't save it. That's all to the cloud, but it eventually syncs, yeah.
But you know what? What I was trying to, and this may be an inappropriate question, and if it is, just wave it by. But is there anything? We have a lot of things like geo redundancy and whatnot we can do right in Azure. Is there anything that any customer could have done to not get impacted with this kind of outage?
No, if you read Jason's blog, what he actually talks about is we had, and this is kind of the way that everything works in large complicated systems. You have a technical problem, a bug in this case, that resulted in high CPU, he talked about, combined with a human error, right? And the human error is that somebody instead of, you know, we flighted it, which is exactly what you're supposed to do. And then you're supposed to, you know, start applying it to each individual data center and you stage them, right? So that how, wow, this whole data center went down. Well, you know, everybody can fail over to the other data centers and, you know, with the geo redundancy and continue. Well, because of the human error, it got deployed very quickly to all of the data centers at once. So the geo redundancy, okay, great. You can do a failover read over there, but that data center is toast as well.
Got it.
So yeah, so that's really the challenge, is that we had a technical error compounded by human error, and the net result is all the ideas that we had for redundancy kind of went out the window. Now the good news is, if there is, you know, good news in this, is that we have, I mean, my team has a very long list of, you know, features, diagnostic features, troubleshooting features, processes on our side. My colleague team, you know, my partner teams that I work with all the time, they have those. My engineering team has a long list of things. The Azure product group, I mean, every team that was impacted by this has walked out of this with a long list of, these are the things we didn't do well or things we need to change as a, you know, outcome of this, which is really kind of ironic because the last week was supposed to be the week where we finished up our planning for kind of our spring release. So as you can imagine, as we're looking at that release, it's like, okay, so all this stuff that we learned, we got to figure out how to slot this stuff in as well, right, to learn from this kind of an outage. But yeah, it was definitely a very, I mean, I think I've had, in the 6 or 7 years I've been doing Azure support, this is probably the biggest and most impactful outage that we had. I mean, we had the certificate outage at one point, but it kind of recovered on its own.
Yeah, I remember that.
You didn't have to do anything. In this case, customers actually had to do something to recover, which is what made it so painful.
Okay.
Well, but thanks for bringing those memories back, Sujit.
Well, sorry for to inflict the pain that way. Hopefully, this is the last time we talk about it.
Yeah.
So, as I mentioned, we do want to get to the topic of the day today, which is Azure Bash. But just real quick before I get down there, I did have one set of, best practices link that I want to share with our listeners. I'll put it in the show notes, of course. It's just related to storage again, you know, since storage is the hot topic of the day these days. there is this very nice, Jeff Urban, who's one of the senior program managers in Azure Storage. He put together this, Azure Storage Performance Checklist. You know, so if you're using some of the core blobs, tables, queues, etc. in Azure, and there are specific ways that you're using it, like, for example, you know, looking at metadata in blobs, using the update message to update queues and things like that. He's got some nice prescriptive guidance and a checklist on what to do so that you can make your operations as fast as possible. Especially if you're, for example, updating a large blob, you can do it in parallel. You can update multiple blocks at the same time and things like that. So little tips and tricks that way. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. So let's get right to it then. So Azure Batch, Mr. Teeter, can you give us, I don't know. This is a fairly new service and I think it's still in preview. So can you give us a little high level on this first and we can drill down a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, so I got involved with this because I had some customers asking for this particular feature or about this feature when it was announced. And to be clear, it's still in preview form, so you'd have to go ahead and enable that if you want to use it. We've gone through where to do that, and we have a link in the show notes we'll put here to the central portal about this batch service and what it does. But when I first did heard about it, I was a little bit confused myself about where this thing fits in the ecosystem of Azure because, you know, we have a lot of ways to do automation. Right? We used to have worker roles that were kind of like, you know, Windows services that would sit there and could do tasks for us. And then we got things like web jobs that came along with websites and the Azure automation, which does automation things too as well. And now we have this batch thing. So I was like, what's the heck's the difference between these? Why do we need so many of these batch processing things? And initially I'd heard about it as it was the HPC stuff. It was the high performance computing. And so I was like, does this like assist HD Insight? I was kind of like, I don't understand where this fits in. And, So I'll get to what the scenario was that I was looking to do, but essentially what this does is allows you to, if you had a custom executable to do processing, let's say, whether it's, massive parallel processing, or even if it's just, a single executable you have that runs a batch job, you can take this thing and take your data, which would be two separate things, and you can take this stuff up to one of these services, essentially, and throw it at it and say, give me 10 VMs and go do this. That's in a nutshell, like what it does. Now, obviously, it's a lot more complicated than that. But it has things like scaling built in because you're going to set up what's called a pool. So it works slightly different than, like, what auto-scaling does on our websites and some of our other, cloud services stuff. This one, essentially, you can build a pool and say, I want, 100 VMs in my pool. And there's a model basically behind this where you set up what's called a work item, and then you, inside work items, you create a job, and then inside of that, you create these tasks. And the task is where you're going to define the executables and those kind of things. It says, here's my executable and here's where my data files are. Now go run that 100 times. And here's 100 files, or here's 10,000 files. Go do that. And so there's two different areas inside the SDK for batch right now. There's batch APIs, which are REST-based, and then we have a library wrapped around it in NuGet that you can download. And that's what I've been talking about with the work items and the tasks. And you essentially encode do all this kind of stuff. So for me, when I was testing this out, I was using just like a C# console type application. And what you do from a high level is go into Azure, you provision what's called a batch service. Once you provision a batch service, it has a URL and it also has keys with it. So it's very much like a storage. In fact, it even has blob in the URL when you provision one of these things, but it has the keys that you get back. So it much looks just like storage to you, kind of. And then in the SDK, when you download a NuGet package, you essentially do the same thing. So you say, we're going to create a new batch pool. We're going to create these work items. And, again, you can do it through the REST API, or you can use the SDK, which has a nice interface to use. And you can go and build all this stuff programmatically and do it. Now, so that's the batch APIs. Now, on the other side, we have this thing called batch apps, which is a higher level. If you thought about batch APIs and pulled it up a level, it kind of wraps that stuff for you. So if you think about like our modern apps where we have like AppX packages and things like that, like these zip files that have all of our stuff, that's a similar approach here, right? So you can take your binaries, you can take your data, and you can zip them up and you can give it to this thing and orchestrate it that way. So it's a little bit more pulled back. There's a lot more details in that, because that one you can actually do like staging, and you can have a sequence that runs that says, go do this, I got 10,000 files out here, go run this thing on them, and you're allowed to use 100 workers. And then when you're done, we're going to merge together that output, and then we're going to go do this other task. And so you can orchestrate those kind of workflows, through that. I'll break for a second since I've been talking.
Wow. So that's very interesting, actually. So, I don't know if you guys, I don't think you guys are old enough to remember the old mainframe days, but.
Wait a minute.
Mid-range systems, but,
yeah. You guys are kids, yeah. So, it sounds very much, similar to the way the IBM mainframes did their processing, right? They broke it down into tasks and jobs, and they would call them programs. And then, they had this language called the JCL, job control language, which let you script out all the actions that you wanted to and how you want to process them. This sounds strangely similar to that approach, and it's big iron, and this sounds like a big iron approach over here.
Yeah, but it's big iron. I was going to say it's big iron on top of like little tiny iron, right? Which is really cool thing, right?
Yep. So the first question that went through my mind is: you said that you could provision like 100 VMs or nodes or whatever you call it to run your batch program. Do you have to? Like an HD Insight and Hadoop, how you have to split your data up. The Hadoop takes care of, doing the stripping of the data into various small buckets. Is that something that is done by Azure Batch, or do you have to do that?
So there's two ways. One, you can do it manually, obviously, if you have, like, already your data chunked up into, you know, things that it can swallow easy.
Like files or yeah. records or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Or you can have, there is a way with the second one with the batch apps where there's this notion of a job splitter. And what that does is you can give it like a value and to get into the technicals, it's a dependency property. So inside your model for your data that you're going to model, you can say, when you see this kind of data, this is the way we're going to split it up. So it can go read your data. And then once it reads it, it could say, you know, based on some metric or some metadata about that data, that's how we're going to split the jobs up so that we can spread it out. So it's pretty flexible with that, yeah.
Now, do you have to actually, like, I mean, how much thought do you have to give into to modifying your code or modifying your work? I mean, it sounds like there's the API or the SDK for doing it, which implies you would have to kind of write code a little bit differently to make it work. Is that correct, or is that an overcomplication?
Yeah, I think there's two coding things going on here. One is, and especially if you're using the API, but if you're using the API, there's a coding thing to even set up your pools and manage that kind of stuff, and that's one solution, if you will, to do that. And that's kind of an ops type thing, a DevOps kind of thing maybe. And then there's the core executable, right, of whatever. That's your business functionality of whatever this thing's going to do. And that one would be a separate project. But, yeah, there's definitely, at least right now, there's a lot of programming. There's not a lot of WYSIWYG, you know, drag and drop stuff. It's a lot more of have to write low code.
But the core program that you write, the actual, let's say, you know, I have a console application today that, you know, processes a big chunk of data. Do I have to modify that program to take advantage of Azure Batch, or do I just have to write this additional code to define the tasks and the jobs and things like that?
Yeah, no, there's not much modification. So if you have your other one, it's not like I think maybe like the web jobs a little bit more where you had to kind of implement certain things inside
right.
for it to come in. You can actually define like the entry points and those kind of things of where it's going to come into. So from that standpoint, it fits pretty well if you already have a program that does something, right? The way that I used it was actually parameterized. So my second executable, I could pass parameters to it. So it's a command line application, and I could pass parameters to it. Like, here's your input file, and here's where you put your output file, for instance. So they had two parameters, and then I just defined that when I set up my job and my task. I would say, here's where the executable is, and by the way, pass two parameters to it. Here's what they should be. And then it goes off to the races and does that.
I see. So Azure Batch then invokes your executable on a said node or said VM. And passes it the right path to the data.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, if you wanted to orchestrate it a different way, like have it read a database or something, like your business executable, you could have it do whatever you want, you know.
That's very nice, very handy.
Now, because this is, I mean, my understanding was kind of yours as well, or what you had as well, Kale, was that there's a tight relationship between this and HC, right? Is this, I mean, from what you're looking at, does it seem like you could, I mean, share is probably not the right word in for this particular context, but is there kind of an easy way to go from, hey, I'm using HPC on-prem or HPC in Azure to Azure Batch or vice versa? Or?
I don't get the notion that's there, at least from my experience with it. It seemed more like it's a different kind of HPC.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a different way to do it. I think that HD Insight has certain things that it does really well, and I think this one fits really well of, yeah, I don't have a lot of, you know, that big data kind of stuff written right now. I have this job that I run, and if you could run that thing at scale, like multiple times, that would be awesome. That would fit my need. And I think that's what my feeling is of where this thing fits in good.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the HPC thing, I know from what I remember working on that a long time ago, that you need to write your program using that IMP protocol, right?
Yep.
And it's typically written in C++, I believe. I'm not even sure they have a C# version of it or .NET version of it. So let's see. So we have HD Insight, as you mentioned, which is used primarily for MapReduce kind of work in the petabyte range. We have disparate data types, very high velocity of data coming in. So that's your HD Insight scenario. And then this particular scenario applies for, as you mentioned, if you have, you know, just like a simple, more simplistic console application that's maybe just going in a loop, doing some work on some sort of a data file or records in some database. And then you've got the automation, as you mentioned earlier. That's not automation, is more for scripting out installs, right? I'm just trying to understand all the various things that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but the more that I've learned about Azure Automation, that product, it seems to me a lot more like what System Center Orchestrator was,
right.
The on-premise version. Yeah, so that's the whole concept of runbooks and having things in PowerShell that are reusable and can be executed, like you said, for automating things like creating things or type of management stuff. But certainly, again, I think you could get creative with that, right, because it's PowerShell.
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, knowing – so that side I would think that would be a little bit more, like you said, on the management side, where an HD Insight is when you have massive amounts of data. And this one is – it's kind of like what we were talking about with Jeff last week, where, well, I kind of want to dip my toe into this HPC stuff or this high-performance computing, and I have this job, and how could we run that at scale or, like, bring it up like that? And I think this is – it's pretty quick to get this going. There's not a lot of work. And you don't have to do a lot of the – other stuff that I think automation does well, where you have to micromanage your VMs, right? So if you had a pool of VMs that say, you could use automation to like spin those up and spin them down and that kind of stuff, but where this handles it for you. Like
right.
You just create the pool,
right.
And you're just paying for that use.
On demand, so. Yeah. And now the VMs, do they have to be Windows VMs?
Right now they do, like this preview. I think
okay.
It's the 2012 and 2012 R2. There's an operating system parameter that you put in there when you define it. You'll have
mm-hmm.
your definition. And I think in the future there's going to be other ones, but right now it's locked to those two. And then you can – I don't know what the upper limit of the pool is right now either, like how big you can make those pools. I've heard that you could have 10,000 cores running in these things. But I don't know. I haven't really pushed that limit, and I haven't seen the documentation for that.
Oh,
but.
Come on, Kale. You want to try it for a little bit just to see what your bill looks like.
Yeah, I'll blow my thing out.
You blow it up in like 5 seconds. It'll be done.
The other thing you can do is you can put in – like it fully respects like the certificates and things for authenticating to storage and those types of things. So when you define your pool for your VMs, you can have them actually go out and reach out to blob storage if you want. If you had some of your – that's a typical approach, is to put your data up there in blob storage and then have it read from there.
Great.
Yeah, it sounds like – I mean like a lot of other things we do that we've got all these different flavors of this big data type solution for different and I'm not anywhere near close enough to that area of technology to know kind of for this scenario exactly which one is better and worse and the pros and cons, but it feels like a lot of like many other things we do, we're putting them all out there so that it meets this wide range of needs with a wide range of tooling, but it's all sitting on top of kind of the same underlying infrastructure, right, or same underlying platform.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the scenario that I was originally thinking about for using this was someone that approached about, you know, they had a process, again, back that they did, and it was done out of house. It's not even done in-house. And they paid a certain amount to have this processing done, right? So they would generate X amount of data. They would pass it to this provider and say, run this algorithm that's compiled into this executable, and give us the output, and it would take X amount of time, right? And it was running on like Cray supercomputers and these kind of things. And so, you know, trying to adapt a really complex algorithm that's already been written and trying to make that work with, you know, maybe even HD Insight or something like that, because it can be complicated, right? And in this case, you could just drop it in. We could say, you have an executable? Great. Bring it over here. And where's your data files at? And we could just give it a pull and say how many times we wanted to run this thing, you know?
Yeah, that seems pretty cool.
That's amazing. Great. Well, Kale, thank you very much for that introduction to Azure Batch. Definitely something new that for a long time we've done a new service, you know? We haven't done a new service in a while. So this was good. Well, anything else, guys, you want to cover today?
I think I'm good.
No.
Okay. Well, let me take this opportunity to wish both of you a very happy Thanksgiving. And I know, Evan, you'll be traveling tomorrow, so safe travels.
Thank you.
The weather is supposed to be bad out here, but hopefully not bad for you guys there. And Kale, are you any plans? Are you going to be in town or?
I'll be here. working with my batch services.
You know, it is kind of sad that I looked at the long weekend and said, you know, I bet when I'm hanging out with my in-laws, I might be able to break some time away and go write some code for fun. What does that say about me?
You should get on some Halo. The multiplayer's still a little janky, but it's okay. We could get on there, Evan.
Yeah, they won't let me take my Xbox up to when we go. I know. I could sneak my laptop up, but they won't let me sneak the Xbox up. It's really kind of a bummer.
The best fun I've had is we've installed the Xbox in our car at one time in one of our long trips. And we were playing in the car.
Oh, that had to, that, I, you know.
We connected up to that overhead TV and it was connected to my Wi-Fi.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, I'll ride the back. Yeah, I'll ride the back, sure.
I will say, though, just, and this is not fanboyish, but, man, that new Halo is amazing, man. Like, so if you played, I'm sure you guys have, but, you know, in Halo 2, when it first came out, that was 2004, I think.
Yeah, a long time ago.
It's amazing, because there's a button on the controller you can flip back and forth between what it used to look like and what it looks like now.
They remastered all the graphics and the sound as well, right?
Yeah, so I'm telling you, this is no exaggeration. It's like playing the Lord of the Rings movie. I mean, you can see the hair on the brute's face, you know, like in each individual hair when he walks in a room, and you're like, this is amazing. Like,
jeez, and this is on the Xbox One, of course, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, so maybe all our listeners should be play some Xbox this weekend. All right, guys, thanks again, and we'll see you all next week.
Sounds good. See you, folks. Have a good holiday.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.